HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Gina Oglesby, who is the founder of Back to Work Connect. Gina, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
No problem. Delighted to be here.
Gina, tell us about Back to Work Connect. What do you guys do?
So Back to Work Connect is an education and employment career hub that was designed and set up to help primarily women in the beginning, but returners and career changers to get back into the workforce.
And how do you support them? What sort of stuff do you do with them?
So our career hub is, you know, it's a multifaceted approach that we've taken. So we have a jobs board, we have a course directory, we have career coaching, we have events, we have a podcast. So we looked at the challenges returners face and people who are looking to change career. And we looked at the challenges they faced and how we could help them overcome them. So we know that we'll say somebody who has been out of the workforce for a number of years, they need help with writing their CV, they need help with interview skills, they also need help with understanding what it is that they want to do. So we created all these events. So we have an event once a month, and the events are designed to address the challenges that returners face. We have a jobs board, so we link in with employers who are returner friendly, who are open to the idea of having returners back in the workforce. They know the value of returners. They know that they have to tap into this demographic if they're going to ever solve the skill shortages that exist in their own workplace. We know a big part of returners is the upskilling and retraining. So we have a course directory. So we partner with colleges, ETBs, through Springboard, through SkillNet, to bring opportunities to our users to help them to re-engage with education. I'm a big believer in lifelong learning. So I think the reskilling and uptraining is a vital part of the return to work journey. But we also know that career coaching is a big part too. So we have a panel of career coaches who help our users to decide what it is that they want to do. You know, many people would say to me, I just don't know what I want to do. And it's really important if they have that idea now that they can sit down and talk to somebody completely impartial and say, what am I going to do? And the career coach will then help them decide what direction they need to take.
And I'm going to jump into some of that, Gina, now in one second. Before we do, just give me an overview. I mean, some of it is obvious, but what are the main reasons people remain out of the workforce for a prolonged period of time before wanting to get back into it?
Well, I suppose the reasons they stay out comes back to the reasons they left in the first place. So for a lot of people, and particularly women, because we know women, you know, carry the burden of family caring, childcare, family commitments is one of the big reasons that many women leave the workforce. But we also have redundancy and we have early retirement and people who just genuinely want to change their career. And so they go back into education. So the reason they left sort of helps then us understand why they have been out for so long. We know that, you know, if you are trying to change career, so if you're going back to education, you know, it takes you a couple of years to get the qualifications that you want if you're starting completely again from scratch. If you take early retirement, so we know that there's a big problem for particularly men who are in midlife, who have left a role, we'll say, in one of the banks or the insurance industries. If they don't get back into work pretty quickly, the chances are that they won't. And it's just that the way men are sort of accustomed to identifying by their role and what they do, and if their industry, they've been in it for so long and they don't know where they want to go, it's very difficult for them to get back. Redundancy is the same. Long-term unemployment, if you've been in the same job for 20 or 30 years, what do I do now if that industry is now gone? But Back to Work Connect, I suppose, was originally designed to help returners, and that's women who took time out to look after their family and, you know, elderly parents or any of their caring commitments. So we know that once they leave, the challenges then to come back are lack of confidence. So if you haven't been in the workforce for years, you know, you really suffer from lack of confidence. Confidence is a big thing. People often feel that their skills are out of date. You know, we know technology changes so quickly that if you're out of the workforce for 6 months, you know, your value decreases. And so you really need to be on top of things like that. So technology is a big one. Lack of confidence, another one. Skills are a big one. But also people who are coming back, and particularly older workers who have family, they need some flexibility. and the level of jobs that offer flexibility is very low. We talk about the Holy Grail, and the Holy Grail is a part-time role where you can work between 9 and 2. So you can drop the kids to school and still do, 20 hours a week. And those jobs are so hard to come by. So that flexibility piece, coupled with the confidence, coupled with the lack of skills, it combines to make a big problem for people.
And is there any barriers to re-entering the workforce that are built up by the organisations just because of historic ways of working? I mean, you've touched on one thing there, that traditional 9 to 5, albeit the blurred lines since COVID. Is there any other barriers like that you guys encounter?
So we've seen there's a lot of things that the employers do and the recruitment process that exists at the moment. And one of the big ones that we often talk about is, we'll say at the very beginning, is the job description. Most job descriptions will have the role, what it's looking for, but then they have a list of 50 essential characteristics that this employee needs to have. I mean, they literally nearly to be able to fly. And that word essential means that when people are lacking confidence anyway, they're going to look at this list of essential things and say, well, I actually only have one or two of them. I don't have all 10, so I'm not going to apply for it. And the process by which organizations put out the job descriptions in the beginning reduces the amount of people who apply. Now, and I understand that HR managers need to sort of whittle out those who are absolutely not qualified for the job. But in the process, what they also do is they whittle out those who have the potential to be suitable for the job. But because they make the recruitment process so difficult, they just don't apply. And we find that's a challenge. There is definitely a bias when it comes to the career gap. So obviously organizations want to have the best candidate, and that's understandable. Everybody does. But if you are going to put those candidates who have a career gap to the bottom of the list, you're still only ever going to pick from that very select few that have exactly what you're looking for. And if you can overcome that career gap, you might be able to see the person for their potential rather than what they've been doing in the last 2 or 3 years. There's very clear bias when it comes to career gap. And, we see a big bias when it comes to ageism as well. People are always looking for the younger. And absolutely, there's a place for graduates, absolutely, in the workforce. But there just seems to be this bias when it comes to older people. And I actually don't understand, because I think people who are midlife workers, they bring so much more to the table than when they were 20. They have so much more learned experience and value. I don't see why they're not hugely valuable and snapped up in an instant. So they're things that the recruitment process can start with.
Yeah, I've worked a long time in HR, but in recruitment specifically, and that recipe list of essential, as you said, skills and things is can be a joke at times. It really can, as opposed to what you want the person to actually do or the real key traits that will make them good at the job. It's an interesting thing you mentioned around ageism. I think that still very much does exist, and clearly you feel plays a part in that. What can organizations do to proactively mitigate that?
There is ways that organizations can take CVs that are coming through from a job, and they can put them through all sorts of software where it takes out the bias. And that's obviously a first step. Even if a CV gets through to the interview stage, that people need to, and HR managers and their hiring managers need to actually look at the individual, not from the list of requirements on their CV, but for the lived experiences that they have. I mean, we always talk about, particularly in business, businesses that are started by people who understand the problem themselves, who have a personal, connection to the actual problem. They're better businesses because they understand where you're coming from. So if we look at from a HR point of view, if you can see people for their potential, for their lived experience, not for the degree they did 30 years ago, but for what they've been doing, like anybody we know that's works or volunteers with their GAA club or their local sports club, and there's a huge amount of organization on that, and things like that need to be taken into account for it to sort of, and ageism is a huge problem. There's no question. And unless you have an interview where nobody can see your face, I suppose it's very difficult to overcome that, and it is an unconscious thing for a lot of people.
you've mentioned that sort of experiences. What other benefits do you think this particular cohort of people bring to an organization?
I suppose one of the big ones is, you know, maturity comes with age. That would be the big one. People who are in midlife tend not to be career jumping, so they tend not to change jobs regularly. People who are in midlife who are looking to change careers get to the point where they want to do something that they value, that has meaning for them. So it's not just about a job, it's about doing something that they actually like. And if you have somebody who's doing something that they actually like, they're going to be more successful in that role. Absolutely, graduates have to learn, and there's no question there, but they aren't changing jobs as much. A lot of people just want the stability. You know, a lot of people want the social interaction. They want to be able to have that flexible hybrid, but they want to be able to make connections on a social level too. But I would bring it back to the lived experience and the wealth of knowledge that people who are a bit older have. And when we talk about midlife, we're not talking about 60, we're talking about 45 onwards, because that ultimately is what midlife is. And people often think that midlife is, you know, people who are in their 60s or their 70s, but it's not. It's people who are much younger who are still faced with, well, you know, I'm looking at somebody who's 45 rather than somebody who's 25. You know, where's their technology? You know, who's going to be quicker to develop? Who's going to be quicker to embrace new technologies? And with a, you know, a little bit of time and understanding, everybody can embrace technology. So that shouldn't be a big issue.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Just as you're talking, you've mentioned graduates twice, and I get the, you know, the counterbalance or the counterpoint of that. Do you see many organizations who have a returnership program the way most large organizations have a graduate program? And if so, what does that look like?
And this is why I suppose the graduate thing always repeats for me. In Ireland, we have over 100 companies with graduate programs. There's less than 5 companies who have returner programs. And the difference between the two is that graduate programs, they absolutely need handholding. They need to be encouraged. They need to be, it's very much starting from scratch. Returner programs, you're not looking at people or candidates who've never worked before. So they're absolutely further along the road. So they don't need as much handholding. All they need is the opportunities. All they need is the HR manager to open their eyes to the potential. As I said, there's over 100 graduate programs, but less than 5. And out of the 5, I'd say there's only one or two really successful ones, because they just don't put the time and effort into them.
You mentioned the recruitment process being a barrier or creating potential barriers. If a company commits to, employing returners or just happen upon the best candidate who is a returner, what sort of things can they put in place to help them reintegrate with an office environment or a working environment?
Again, not all returners need a huge amount of handholding. So, you know, there's no point in pretending that they all do, and there's no point in pretending that they don't. So there's a couple of things that employers could do. And one would be, you know, a staggered contract start. So if it's a full-time role, regardless of whether it has flexibility in it, but if it's a full-time role, that maybe in the first 3 months they build up to the full-time role, that they could have a part-time role, they would do 2 days a week or 3 days a week, building up. So that just from a purely practical point of view, if you have somebody who isn't in work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and then all of a sudden they are, there's a huge amount of turmoil in their lives and at home. And family is a big thing, and work-life balance is a huge thing. So if we can integrate them in gradually and, you know, let them build up their feelings and let them sort of hit the ground in a gentle way rather than force them in 40 hours a week and that's it. So the staggered start point would be a good one. Again, you know, the accountability partners, somebody on the ground in the office to say, you just check in on Mary in the morning, make sure she's okay. Just check in to see if she's having any technical difficulties. I mean, Back to Work Connect as an organization, we all work remotely. Now we do meet, but what we do is we have team meetings that are online, but every day there's a phone call. is everything going okay? And even at the very start, where it's, you know, the computers, this is how you log in, that's how you do this. And just walking through things on a really, you know, day by day basis, that it is it's a process that people need to adjust to, particularly if you've been out for any length of time. It is a huge change to you mentally. So there's a couple of things, you know, I think employers need to be mindful, obviously, of their employees' mental health, and all those kind of things are really important. And the more somebody feels valued in a role, the longer they're going to stay. So I think it's very important in the first couple of weeks, essentially, to not even to hold their hand, because I don't want to use that word, but to make sure that they're adjusting properly and that any needs that they have are being met.
And to be fair, I don't want to position it as though they're, you know, more. It's just like you would do with any new joiner, really.
Absolutely.
There's probably not much enhancement on top of that. You mentioned, hopefully I'm quoting you right, returner-friendly companies. What are they? What do they look like?
So returner-friendly companies acknowledge the career gap. They acknowledge that, you know, each role needs some level of flexibility. You know, we know that the traditional 9-to-5 doesn't work for the majority of people anymore. And hybrid, you know, anybody who can say, well, look, this is a hybrid role, that there is a mix. I'm a real big believer in the social interaction of work, the actual meeting person in person. So whether it be 1 or 2 days a week, I do think that's a hugely valuable piece. I know not all organizations feel the same way, but, you know, I do, particularly for people who are coming back. It is a lot about that social isolation that you feel when you're at home on your own. So that coming back in and having a little bit of a social gathering, being able to chat around the tea. So what we sort of say is that for anybody who is coming on board to our platform, that if they are returner friendly, that they acknowledge these things, the career gap being the most important.
One question to start. Why are people so allergic to this career gap? I don't understand, because you can be gaining valuable skills during that gap just because you're not in an office environment. Why do you think people are so against it?
If I had the answer to that now, I'd be a millionaire. I don't know. The only thing that we've seen is that there's this perception of the word returner means that somebody is not ambitious, or they're not, you know, committed, or that they're just a little bit of a flake because they only want to do part-time and they only want to do half days and they're not really committed to the role, which is totally wrong, and it's totally the opposite to what the returners actually are. And I don't understand. Yeah, I mean, we've had many conversations with employers about this whole word returner, whether it sort of means that they are, you know, lower level candidates or lower level roles, that they're not middle management. I mean, I know not everybody who's at home is a professional, but there's a lot of them. There's a lot of people who are middle management. And one of the big challenges that we find is that you have somebody who was in middle management when they worked last, and they're now applying for roles that are sort of way below their standard, and they don't get these roles, and they're questioning, why? I have all this experience, why am I not getting these roles? And it's because 3 times as many people apply for these lower level roles, and, you know, then it knocks the confidence. And, you know, we always sort of advise everybody, go for the higher level role, go for the medium level role, go for what you were at when you left, not what you think you deserve now, or what you, but go for the role that you were at when you left, because that's the level that you should be at. Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge. And I don't understand why employers do not grasp them with both hands.
That's really interesting, Gina. Are you finding with the people you're working with that they're having more success than based on that at the roles that they were, you know, roughly where they had left the workplace rather than lower level roles?
Absolutely. Because if you portray confidence and you say, well, this is where I was and this is where I'm going in now. I mean, we often talk to people and say, well, look, you can't take a step down knowing that you're going in on the idea that you are going ahead. But I wouldn't go down, you know, 2 or 3 levels lower. Go in where you feel you should be and then go up, because these are where your skills are. And if you don't portray your confidence in your own skills, well, then how is anybody else going to believe in you?
No, that's good advice for sure. COVID, remote working, hybrid, how has it affected this particular group?
Funny you ask. We actually have a survey that's on our website. So it's a return to work, return to education survey. And one of the questions is, has COVID-19 increased the opportunities for you? And the reality is not. It hasn't. People are still reluctant to take on people with a career gap, you know, and that's just the reality. what we had hoped would happen with COVID and everything going online pretty much overnight, that the opportunities would be opened up more to people who had that challenge when it comes to, you know, dropping the kids off or, you know, their caring responsibilities, that the opportunities would be much more openly available. And that hasn't happened. So we have more people who are applying for roles because they don't have to be. But the amount of companies that don't offer remote or flexible or hybrid working is still, you know, it's still quite large. So there's very few fully remote jobs unless you're, you know, lucky enough to be in particular industries. So I would say from our research that it hasn't helped the amount of opportunities that our returners are hoping for.
A lot of organizations talk about inclusion and diversity. I think it's massively talked about within organizations at the moment. This is an inclusion and diversity play as much as anything, surely.
100%, yeah. I mean, we have a gender pay gap, which is really obvious, and we know why the gap is there. And we know organizations tend to pay men more. I mean, we know all the reasons behind this. But if we do not get more women back into the workforce and at the levels that they deserve to be at, we are never going to address the issue of gender pay equality. We're just never going to do it if we do not help women get back into the role that they should be at, rather than assuming that because they have to work part-time, that it's the lower level role that they need. They get the lower level role, they get lower salaries, and then the gap just widens.
And if you, two final questions for you, Gina. One, if someone is listening to this now and they're trying to get back into the workforce, what would be the sort of, what do you think is the biggest piece of advice you could give them?
We always talk about this, the back to work mindset. It's actually understanding what it is that you want to do yourself, not just applying for jobs and hoping that you'll get something, but actually have a plan. Understand what it is that you want to do and have a plan of how to get there. It might not be in the next month or the next 2 months. It might be in the next 6 months or the next 12 months, but have a plan. So if you need to reskill, you can. If you need to, you know, get your CV out and know that this journey isn't going to end quickly. It is a journey that can take years for some people. There's a lot of preparation that needs to go into, but I think it's the understanding what it is that you're looking for at the very beginning is what's needed.
And final question, if there are HR managers listening to this, what sort of steps can they take to help their organization become more inclusive, more diverse, and more returner friendly?
Well, firstly, they can contact us at Back to Work Connect. They can become a returner open employer really easily. But they can just, it comes back down to the most basic things on your job description, the essentials, the desirables. It's how the job descriptions are written, how the interviews take place. If you've looked at some of the job applications recently, and the application is pages and pages long, and it's nearly there just to discourage people from actually applying. That type of process just eliminates so many people because they're frightened of doing it, where if they were a little bit easier to apply, and even if they, I know, you know, many employers are just bombarded with applicants, and most of them are not even remotely qualified, and I understand that that's a huge problem from a HR point of view, but there has to be a happy medium between finding the people and giving those people an opportunity to put themselves forward without just dismissing them instantly because the application process is just too difficult.
No, really good advice. Gina, how can people get in? You've already made a segue for this, but how can people get in contact if they want to continue the conversation?
So our platform is backtoworkconnect.ie, or you can contact me at gina@backtoworkconnect.ie.
Gina Oglesby, backtoworkconnect.ie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.